This is Becky and... This is Becky and Lou Goldberg for the Pittsburgh Section National Council of Jewish Women Oral History Project Number 2 on February 12, 1984, interviewing Eddie Steinfeld. Where do you live, Eddie?
4741 Coleridge Street, Staten Heights.
Last time we interviewed you, you began to talk about the feeling you got about walking down the street in the hill and how you had this Jewish feeling. Tell us a little about the shops and some of the atmosphere there.
Well, when you went down Center Avenue those years, there was an atmosphere of being in a Jewish neighborhood. Some Friday night, there were many stores open. In contrast to Squirrel Hill, you'll find stores open on Friday night. But there you had, those days you had, all the stores were owned by Jews, and stores are closed on Friday night. Time became the High Holy Day. You walked down Center Avenue. The only lights were the lights of the street lights. And that you felt there was something in the air. You felt a feeling, well, this is a Jewish neighborhood. Down further down on Center Avenue, down below Robert Street, no, right by Miller Street, there was a store, it was called Hershey's Bookstore. And his daughter is what's her name, Pauline. Pauline, she's married to Heim Milch. Heim Milch just passed away recently. Her father had this Yiddish store where he had all the Yiddish newspapers, the Yiddish books. And there's also a center where, quote, the Yiddish intellectual would come and discuss whether it be socialism or communism or Zionism, labor Zionism, Bundism. It sharpened one's mind. You would listen to these people who were talking about these various isms and philosophies, and one felt that getting one got an education, just listening to these people who were knowledgeable in their given subject. And that was the center of the Yiddish cultural life on Center Avenue. And next door was Meisel's phonographic store, and usually he would have a loudspeaker outside the store, and he'd play Yiddish retros, where they were secular or Hasidic, and Sunday morning especially, he'd blare forth and your people who would just listen, stand outside in the store and listen to the wonderful recordings made by the Jewish or Yiddish artists. I say one felt that there was that feeling of being in a Jewish environment, totally. Of course, that doesn't say that there were not the Italians who came up or that part of the hill. There weren't blacks who lived in that section, but it was a Jewish. The Center Avenue was the Jewish street.
How old were you? Did you have a feeling that it was a ghetto? What was it like? I mean, did you just stay in around Center Avenue, around your house on Roberts and Miller? Did you go to Squirrel Hill? Where were you in this scene?
Well, those who had cars would visit people living in Squirrel Hill or East Bend, or I decided to take a streetcar to Squirrel Hill East End. That was where the bulk of the Jews lived in those years. The minority were living whether in East End or in Squirrel Hill, but the bulk of Jews lived down the village at that particular time.
Now, how old were you at this time? What were you doing? Where were you? Had you married yet?
No. Hey, I thought you were stating behind.
Oh my God. Okay. How old were you?
Well, not that old. I mean, I was about 18. Mm-hmm. 18 enough. I mean, I was Well, being I was born in 1914, so so figure it out for yourself.
So you were a young boy and you listened to these songs.
Well, because it was well, that well, yes, when I got to be 18 and 19, mm-hmm. and, you know, and 20, and then I, of course, I was involved by that time. I started with Yiddish theater, like I said, with the Mesher in 1929. So, I would go around, like hanging up the posters, you know, for Yiddish theater.
Did you bring the tickets to
Hershey's
to sell?
Hershey's did not, no. Hershey's not sell tickets. We didn't bring Hershey's because the tickets are sold at the box office.
Oh, I see.
At the theater.
I see.
Yeah.
So from the poster you showed,
yes,
that
the, but that was not, the poster I showed you, that was not in the Lando Theater or the Center Square Theater. This was just went in the hall at the Ivy Park and Settlement to have a
show.
A show.
One night stand. Okay. So you were pretty young when you were already doing that. Okay, so you listened to these people there.
And then
you went from an usher, then what was your next job?
From usher, then I went to some property for getting props for stage presentation, and also working, and from there we went to working backstage, and I was a stage chef, helping to changing the set or building the set.
These troops came in, and how long did they stay? And was there a residence company?
Yeah. They came in around, they opened up shortly after Rosh Hashanah, and they played till around Pesach time. And that was the company that played for the season. And when I first started, I think I told you that Lando built this theater and he engaged these people paying them a salary in 1929. And the union company, and he paid them a salary. He had no problem with that company, and then the next year he had no problem with that company. And then he ran into problems with the company and companies thereafter because it was on a cooperative basis. But let me stop for a moment. I think it's interesting that the ones who came here on a salary basis at that time, actors usually had a meeting which they called a benefit for themselves, even though they were on salary, but the theater owner would grant them the privilege of having a night where the box office income would revert to them, or whatever gift the followers of his or her would bring that evening, and the actors would ask for nothing as a tribute. So the actor was able to make himself a few extra dollars, or with whatever they gave him for gifts. It could be shoes, a suit, a shirt, a hat, whatever. And that was called the actor's benefit. You don't hear too much about that, but that's all the theater of yesterday, you know, which people today, the actors would not have known anything like that, the benefit for a Yiddish actor.
Now, how frequent did they have the actor's benefit?
Well, for the season, one actor would get a benefit.
It was his for the night.
So that one night, that's it.
They each had a turn.
One actor per season.
Right, yeah. No, well, I mean, every company, the company, but everyone in the company would have one night.
Like 1 week was Jenny.
One night was for a person.
Yes.
Another night was another one.
I
okay.
See.
Now, when they came in, or when they had a production, how many days did they have? And did they change every 3-4 days?
Yeah, well, when they first started,
Did they have any matinees? Were they during the day?
Saturday matinees they had, yeah. Friday night, Saturday matinees.
Friday night?
Sure, I guess. Now, it's an interesting thing, I think, that, did we discuss that before?
Yeah, not on the show.
You know, it's interesting, it's that, you see, when I talk about that Jewish street, Center Avenue, I should have said over the speech, but it's always likely referred to as Yiddishkeit. Yiddishkeit is an all-embracing term. And don't forget, we have today, I mean, Jews who are secularists, Jews who are not religious people, Jews who think in terms of just the Yiddish culture, think in terms of only Jewish nationalism. Good example, I mean, how many Jews belong to the synagogue in Israel? You know, there's a good majority, a good percentage, I would maybe say 50% of the people in Israel don't go to the synagogue, you know, because they're living in the land of Israel. I don't want to go into that philosophy, you know, what is more important, I mean, the land or people or God, I mean, it's all intertwined, you know. So when you have this feeling, I mean, the Jews respected, they may not have agreed, but they respected one another for their personal beliefs. And the rabbis, and I'm talking about rabbis, the Zivitzis and the Ashinsky, the founders of the Mizrahi movement in America. They tolerated the secularist Jew. And if the Jew wanted to go to a Yiddish play on Friday night, he's a Jew, he's entitled to. We can't tell him what to do. We're not a theocratic nation. We don't have a pope. We have freedom to practice our beliefs as we see fit, as long as we do not negate our Judaism, or negate the fact that we are Jews. And so you never, so what, you matter of, well, give you a good example. I think maybe I mentioned it before. Lando, the owner and builder of the Lando Theater, which housed the Yiddish Theater, he was president of the Romanian Shul. And he would come to this theater Friday night, come and sit there and see the performance. Nobody said anything. And this is something that I myself have a difference with this Pittsburgh Jewish community. You see, the Jews of yesterday, the Jews on the Hill, were much more religious in the Orthodox sense, because at that time they weren't conservative Jews to speak of. Reformed Jews, of course, there were some Reformed Jews who were bordering on the line of Unitarianism, you see. So there were no bar mitzvahs at that time in a temple. What I'm saying is that, so what was Orthodoxy? You had more Jews who went to the synagogue then you have who go today. I don't know whether it numbers or percentage-wise, based upon the development of Weichard and Gadu, you must have maybe 25 synagogues on the hill. So I say that when you asked the question on Friday night, and then Saturday matinee, they also went to. They're talking about Saturday matinee, I thought it was interesting to know, you know, that during 1 year after when they started, things were going down, you know, they went, they started to the campaign cooperative in order to entice the Jewish customers to come to the theater on Saturday matinee. They did what the movie was, and we gave away dishes, you know. The session years ago, we went to the theater, the movie happened, and we did the dishes. So the Yiddish theater also gave them a dish, you know, so they can build up their dishes.
Tell us a little more about Mr. Lando.
Where did he come from? What made him get into Jewish business? Well, I don't know what made him get into it. I mean, Mr. Lando was in the real estate business. He owned a lot of property up on the hill.
How
do you spell his name? L-A-N-D-O, right? He owned some property on the hill. I don't recall that I told you that my recollection of the start of Yiddish theater on Center Avenue is when they had this old movie house called the Victoria Theater, and when they were building, they put up the center square, so they started Yiddish vaudeville in this Victoria Theater. I think they used to bring them, these pop boxes or whatnot to sit on, and the owner was Hendel, the old man Hendel, not the younger brother, who was active in the Romanian Shul too. So he wanted to be outdone by this man here, you know. So what he did, and also the Hendel family, or Harry Hendel, was also bringing in big road shows in the late 20s to the Fourth Now, to Julia Moss, he's at a road show coming out of New York, the Maltese Pecans and the Moore Schwartzes, the Lebedevs, these are the people that are on the road shows. So Lando decided, well, I'm not going to be upstaged by this person, so I think I'll go ahead and I'll build myself a theater, a Yiddish theater, you see. Because by that time, the Roosevelt Theater was already being built, and so the Center Square was turned over to a company of, quote, non-union actors from New York. So Lando felt that competition that he wanted. He felt, hey, if he's doing it, I might as well go ahead and I'll engage a union company and have a theater.
Who started the Roosevelt?
Harry Hendel. Harry Hendel built the,
Well, did he have the Victoria Theater?
No, his older brother had the Victoria Theater.
But were there three Jewish theaters?
First, Victoria Theater was a movie house. Okay? Then, when they built the Center Square Theater, they decided to give up the Victoria Theater, so some Yiddish actors who were from New York, non-union Yiddish actors, and they started doing some vaudeville in that theater. I'm going back to about 1927, I feel like, when you asked me, you know, how old was I then? I was 14. So then they went to the Center Square. Then the Yiddish company went down to the Center Square. And meanwhile, Harry Hendel came in on the scene because his brother, on the regular meeting, his brother worked something out. So Harry Hendel, he built the Roosevelt Theater. Yeah, he was a non entrepreneur. I mean, a very, very smart showman.
Remember any of the shows?
Oh, no, I can't. No, there are so many shows. You see, when they did, you asked me how often they played, you know. Well, there were times when they played two shows a week. And there were times when they played three shows a week. And then there was a time when we could not play on Sunday. So we had it there. They worked it out. They called it a benefit. I got the permission from the city to, you know, benefit you could play, you know, and so on and so forth. Which reminds me of a Sunday performances. I arranged for the company to appear on radio, WWW, Sunday morning, to go down there and sing, you know, songs over the year. And so this was good publicity for the theater, you know, good, but also good for the WWW because they got a program on the air for nothing, you know. As I recall, at that time I was a bus man, I arranged for it, and for them to get down there. But what happened was that a friend of mine who was in the Yiddish theater business, he was in Yiddish theater, Yiddish actor, and he became a company manager, he became a good man in the American theater, and Joe Grossman, who became company manager for the Biggies. We took my fair lady to Russia to run that company. Company manager for $1,000, the Biggies. I got the shoes. So at that first time, he became the representative or the executive director of the Society of Jewish Composers and Authors.
He's the friend.
No, he's a
Joseph. Joseph Grossman,
yes. Yeah, so, all right. He wrote to me and he said that since they're playing Jewish music on the air, they should take out a license. I just decided not to post it in office. So I go down to this man by the name of Smith, you know, and I say, look, you should take out a license. He says, you have to pay. You know, so he got so mad. So he came up to the theater and he said, I don't understand it. Here's this fella. He gets me this. He got the Jewish, because then he comes and asks for money, he says, for a license. I made myself scarce. I didn't want to see that. But there on Sunday, I mean, the Yiddish program, the actors live on WSW, and we play Sunday night theater at the Lambert Theater.
That WSW thing was publicity for the
for the Jewish theater for years.
Now tell us a little. You told us last time you got the rooms for the actors and actresses. How what they did to the kids when they came in, lived on the roof, they lived here.
We had to go. In those years, I think it was the period of the anti-Jewish community, not having that kind of money, so we always rent out rooms, because it was a Yiddish song, it doesn't like, just being out bored there by my wife.
I'm a boarder at my wife's house.
The strangers. Paying rent. So the what you had, then you had these rooms were available, people wanted to. So it's one of my duties were, I don't know whether it's self-imposed or it's that, I don't recall, how about getting rooms for these people? And I would go around and ask certain people who knows the so-and-so. And we're talking about Depression, we're talking about 1932 or 1950. I'm not talking about 29 or 30 when they were paying salaries. But then in 32, 33, I became more actively involved with the Jewish companies. So I became an ordinary usher, but then I took on more responsibility. And so I would get these, go and find out in this room, they pay rent at $2 a week per room, and this is what they were paying for rent.
Okay, so then you went. Doing more and more things in the theater.
That 1970. So then I also started to property for it, and I became a poster, and I started hanging posters up all over the Pittsburgh where the Jewish communities were.
Did you go outside of the hill?
Oh, to tell you where we used to go.
The two people, the Hill District, Fifth Ed, Oak, East End, Squirrel Hill.
Homestead, Braddock, the Keysport, traveled all in these areas, and there were Jewish butcher shops there.
The Keys Rock?
Huh? No, not the Keys Rock. There wasn't something. I don't remember even having a kosher butcher shop in the Keys Rock.
Mm-hmm. How'd you get around?
Streetcar, or then where the car made available, we drive up to the Keysport and. They had to put the posters up, put the yardstick in there, and with the paper, gum paper tape.
What was the price of admission to the
time? When are you talking about? We were talking the middle 30s, and you talked 50 cents. You're talking 35 cents. Maybe that's it. So 75 cents, that was a high price sticker you got. But it went down to 1545.
And what did the leading actors and actresses get? What were their wages?
Again, what period of time?
When you started, and then.
It was said that the leading lady, I think they said 1929, the leading lady was getting about $125 a week. Yeah, I heard it. I didn't know what the scale was at that time. But starting in 1932, then it became cooperative. And I think I explained to you, cooperative. Well, the cooperative setup was that the company would come in, he would bring them in, and they would bring them in, and he would share with them the profits of the box office, which meant that after they took off the expenses, the advertising expenses, then whatever remained, that's what we're talking about posters, because. And they also were advertising the Yiddish newspaper. That would go off the top. It was like they called a super contract. And then they would divide up 50-50. But what he did was, he said, I will guarantee you $10 a week. So which means if you got a company of 10, or no, he had something about 12 or 14 people, so he had to come up with $120 or $140 a week, regardless what the box office was. And then at that point in time, they were not playing Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. They didn't play the whole week, you see. So then the fight developed where he did not fulfill his commitment, and that's where he had to fight with the company. Two companies left. There was one company, I remember 1932, where a company had a falling out with him, and they went on to St. Louis. Another company came in on the same basis, and they had a falling out with him. He wouldn't want to pay the guarantee. I shouldn't talk about the dead people, but
Well, now, was this the rise, the highest part of Jewish theater in
the years 1930s. I mean, you talk about the. When you talk about the peak of what are you talking about? Something in theater starts at 29. Well, it was an entire area for about 10 years, you see. But the thing is, as the years went by, it went down. You see, you might have said maybe the peak was 34, 35, or 36, but you know, even though they were playing cooperatively, you see, but that's still, there was enough people supporting Swedish food on a cooperative basis. For instance, one company in 1933 left the Landau Theater and went over to the Roosevelt Theater. It played only two performances a week on Sunday matinee and Sunday night. And there was enough of an income that came in there to compare it with playing three nights across the street at the Landau Theater.
Why did it decline?
Well, you had migration. You had Jews moving up the hill and moving to Squirrel Hill, and maybe transportation problems. You know, coming down to Center Avenue, where we Jews can be snobs too. You know, sometimes we want to burn our bitches and bridges behind us. You know, and. I said, well, we don't want to know what was, and I say, personally, the gift is past, but no future.
What about now, did they ever have Jewish theater in Oakland or Squirrel Hill? Followed the people?
No. Well, a couple of times, I think what happened was they would have, the amateurs would have a Yiddish show at the Y. Mm-hmm. It would be a one-night thing, but these were the amateurs, not the not the professionals.
That Jewish theater did not flourish as they... It's a peak in this.
It only happened to Pittsburgh. It happened to Cleveland, Detroit, Chicago, where there were Yiddish theater.
Did you realize this was happening? So what happened to your interest?
I had no career, so it's not for me. I worked and I became involved with theatrical advertising and sold printing to the motion picture houses and published the most films and who were you with? So I was selling advertising, printing for Strawberger printing, but I would use sort of gimmick to promote the film, you know. Remember one time I made for the Lewis Schmeling fight. That time I used to show Matthew on the screen. Well, I would drop a imaginary ticket with the admission, and that would be a throwaway that the exhibitors would use in order to stimulate interest to come to see the Schmeling Lewis fight on the screen. Or put up a subpoena for the season to have the court call, gadget, a subpoena. You know. I went to that, but during that time, I mean, if Landau wanted me to have the Yiddish theater, I managed the Yiddish theater for him. Also managed the Yiddish theater when I went down to the Center Square. One season they played at the Center Square. They came in and the company rented the theater itself. They played Cleveland and Pittsburgh. So the days they played in Pittsburgh, I represented them here and did all the a motion, like it was a manager's theater here. It was like 1934 or something.
Okay, let's turn the page.